This is The Record from KUOW. I'm Jeannie Yandel, and today we're taking a local look at the Me Too and Time's Up movements and trying to figure out what happens next. If you've got something you want to say about the Me Too movement, maybe something you want to tell your child, a friend, your mom, we're collecting listener letters and we'll share those on our website. You can email us at record@kuow.org. And Marcy Silman is here with me. Hi, Marcy.
Hi, Jeannie.
You've been thinking about Me Too as highlighting a symptom, a big symptom, but a symptom of a bigger systemic problem at work, yes?
Right, Jeannie. Me Too has rightfully focused on sexual harassment, but at least when I take a step back and think about it, harassment is part of this bigger problem at work, and it is systemic. Women, in many cases, aren't treated the same as men in their workplaces, and I'm just going to call it by the S word. It is sexism. Here's just one recent example of what it looks like. Earlier this year, a respected BBC editor quit her job to protest gender pay inequities at the network. Instead of raising salaries, four highly paid male journalists at the Beeb took pay cuts in the name of equity. I was hoping that would become a trend, but I can't see that happening. Worldwide, women still make about 70% of men's salaries for the exact same work. We're less likely to be considered for promotion. And professions that become female-dominated often see a decline in compensation.
Actually, I heard recently that as more women become veterinarians as they go into that field, the overall salary for that profession just keeps going down, as an example of that.
Just one example. And there's more. It is less tangible, Jeannie, but it's no less important. Many of us start to internalize messages we get about ourselves at work. We're not tough enough, or we're too pushy. We're too emotional, or we're too cold. The message is there's a way you're supposed to be and act at work if you want to get rewarded, and many of us are just doing it wrong, or we're maybe not good enough to learn how to do it right. So we're penalized, and in many cases, we're mistreated as a result. Our guests this hour are three very successful women who know some aspects of this, or maybe all three firsthand. Mona Lee Locke is a former journalist, former First Lady of Washington State. She's worked in public, private, and government sectors and continues to do that. Thanks for coming in.
That's my pleasure.
Also with us, Valerie Curtis Newton, a professor of acting and directing and now head of the directing program at the University of Washington, a director in her own right, and an administrator at a giant public university. So you've kind of wear all hats as well. Thanks for being here. Certainly not least, but last on this list is Christy Coulter. She's a Seattle writer. She works in the tech industry. She's been at Amazon. So thank you for coming in as well.
Thanks for having me.
Mona, I want to start with you. I remember when you were on King 5 television, but how old were you when you started your journalism career?
Wow, what a question to start with. I was in my 20s. I was in my late 20s.
So what was that experience like for a young, ambitious woman?
Well, I think it was so competitive in the field, and it was very different world, I hope, back then than it is today. Very male-dominated. You had to swear. You had to be tough. You had to act like them to be considered, seriously.
And did they consider you seriously?
Not in my first job, for sure. No, I mean, I was in the Midwest. I went to, and I wrote about this on Facebook and in the Seattle Times op-ed that I wrote, that I went, it was my first job. I was so excited. I just graduated from graduate school in journalism, and I got there. And, well, the first thing that happened was they told me I had to go get an exam, physical exam, to make sure that that I was fit for the job. We had to carry 30 pounds of equipment. And so I went to this doctor they assigned me to, and we were going through the exam for the fitness, and he said, "Can I do a breast exam on you?" And I thought, well, is this part of the physical? And he says, "Well, no, but since you're undressed, it would be very easy to just do that." And I said, "No." And then later in the physical at the end, he says, "Well, I need you to do, you know, X amount of sit-ups and push-ups." And I said, "Well, can I get dressed first?" And he said, Oh, sure, you can get dressed. And it turned out subsequently that the employee after me that was hired actually filed a claim, because I was the one called in the office to talk about it, and it was mistaken identity. But so that happened. And then as I worked at this television station, it was during Anita Hill, right? And so there's trial, and so it was very prominent, the sexual harassment issue. And yet then I found out that all the guys apparently at the station had made a bet when I came as to who would sleep with me first. And so that was told to me. And then my news director, I could go on and on.
I know.
The list,
I mean, we could. In fact, there are so many stories like this. So we could spend the whole hour, but we aren't going to do that because there are three of you. And we could spend an hour on all of that. Valerie, when I think about the theater world or the world of entertainment, there's that legendary casting couch. You started off as an actor and then switched to directing. And I imagine that switch had its own difficulties for a woman in theater.
Yeah, I think being a director, I constantly get challenged by male artists in the process. We can be in rehearsal and have people talk over us, even though we're supposed to be the leader of the endeavor. Learning how to handle that, especially as a Black woman, because my response would be to slap them all down, and then I become the angry Black woman. So waltzing between stereotypes has been very difficult to navigate. I will say it's also something about being in the arts, the idea that we are somehow more sexually liberated and bohemian, and that we are unencumbered by the same sorts of mores and traumas that other people are. I remember being an undergraduate and having an acting teacher who wanted to have us be more in touch with our bodies. And so he had these mattresses laid out, and he would say that we needed to pretend that we were making love on these mattresses while he walked amongst us and tried to encourage us to be more and more uninhibited. I have heard other acting students being felt up, being encouraged to take more and more risks, and the idea that, are you brave enough to take your top off, or is the project important enough for you to allow someone to touch you inappropriately? So there's a way in which the idea of what is artistic makes it rife for opportunities for abuses.
So we're going to go from the world of art to the world of tech. And Christy Coulter, there's this, I'm not sure if it is a stereotype, but tech bro. We all hear that term. So you heard Mona Locke, you heard Valerie Curtis Newton. Does any of this sound familiar to you?
Yes. I mean, not the specifics in my career. I've been fortunate enough that it's been many years since I've had to deal with harassment. But, you know, most stereotypes start from a place of truth. So there certainly is such a thing as a tech bro. I've spent most of my career working in environments around tech where women were distinctly in the minority. And what I've experienced is there's a lot of pressure, very subtle pressure, to act like the men around you, whether that's authentic to you or not, to sort of be really tough, not to be emotional, basically to act in ways that people aren't really comfortable with women acting. So on the one hand, if you act like yourself, you're too feminine. But if you act like a man, that makes them nervous. So you kind of can't win. It's like there's an invisible tightrope that you're always trying to walk.
And that echoes what both Valerie and Mona had to say. Now, Mona, I'm curious how, for you, starting in a job, having to walk the gauntlet of people being very abusive sexually and then wanting you to be swear and be tough like a sailor, be like a man. I mean, how does that impact the job that you were actually hired to do?
You know, out in the field, it was okay, except for the people that I dealt with and interviewed. I believe really it came from me to try and be like one of the guys to fit in. I mean, it was really trying to snap them out of thinking me as a woman and in a sexualized way and more so as a colleague and someone who had credibility. So I had to adapt to be like them.
And Valerie, you mentioned that you didn't, you know, your natural inclination was to slap people down, but you didn't want to be the tough Black woman. There's another word that we might use for that as well. We're euphemizing here. How did this impact the job that you had to do being the artistic person in charge of a production?
Every bad piece of theater I ever have made has been trying to accommodate someone else's idea of who I am. That when I'm true to myself, I'm relatively successful. Not all the time, but most of the time. And when I'm busy being preoccupied with how other people see me, I invariably fail.
Is that something you had to learn how to do, or is that inherent to you?
I had to learn it by making bad theater and being ashamed of the work I put out and sort of eventually vowing not to do that. Whether it's good or it's bad, I have to own it. And in order to own it, I have to be present for its making.
Now, we've touched on race, but clearly for Mona and Valerie, the race is as well as gender is a factor. And so how do you think that those dual minefields compounded what you were experiencing in your workplaces, if at all?
I think for me, at least, the first step to moving past it was to actually recognize my own internalized racism. What are the myths and stereotypes about Black people that I believed? So being afraid of being labeled the angry Black woman was something that I also believed. I had to decide that there was no such thing as an angry Black woman, that there are Black women who encountered situations in which anger was a valid and useful response, and that it was a choice. And then I could begin to see other people's racism in action and get that, oh, they're putting that on me because they're actually afraid of my power, afraid of my intellect, afraid of my talent. And it's not my job to make them feel comfortable. It's my job to do my job as effectively and efficiently as I can. But that was a huge shift, was to say, what is it about the stereotype that I believe or that I'm complicit in? Mm. And then how can I break that? And when I break it, then it breaks it for everyone around me.
Now, Mona, I know your situation in the world of journalism became untenable at some point. So you didn't come to that same sort of, maybe you did come to that.
It has been a long process, and I think I am still learning and embracing my boundaries and who I am, right, and what I believe in. Having been in the public eye, feeling like you're in a goldfish bowl, right, really feeling being judged so many ways, I think I've very much held it all inside and in a way have stunted my own growth as a person, as a professional, as a woman. And I think when I went to my first job, because the harassment actually has happened all throughout the years. It's not just at the first job, but I was also the first person of color ever hired for on-air in that market, and they hired a Black photographer the week after me, and the news director got a death threat. Mm. So that was how extreme it was for me. I was accosted in my apartment building. You don't belong here. Go back to your country where you belong. And so, you know, I think it all folds together into identity. And for me, being raised as, you know, second-generation Chinese American, I did defer to others. I was more less assertive, I think, not in the profession, but in general, right? Less assertive as I should have or would have been or as I am today.
And so a lot of that for me as a Caucasian woman, that being less assertive and deferring is very familiar. And Christy Coulter is sitting nodding her head. So there's the just single mantle of assimilating, I think, the messages. I mean, how does that play out for you in the world of tech? You talked about sort of being a guy, but what else did you take away?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You know, when I was very young, you would get these messages like, oh, if a boy pulls your hair, that just means he likes you. If a boy hits you, it means he likes you. And boy, you really internalize that. And so I internalized this idea. I just always had to get tougher, 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 no matter what, how people treated me or how I was overlooked. But, you know, what doesn't kill you doesn't always make you stronger. It just kind of makes you, like, wounded in a lot of different places. I think for me, the change came. I was listening to what these two women said, and I realized at some point there was no way to be the right amount of female in my career, or the right way to be a woman in the world. So I might as well just do whatever I want. And it was a really powerful moment. And it kind of shifted things for me in a subtle way where I just thought, well, if you can't win, then you might as well just live the life that you want to live. And it's actually made me more authentic. And I think that being kind of beaten into that place of becoming more authentic as a last resort has done great things for me.
So it's really interesting to think about that now. I think I might be the oldest one sitting at this table, but Valerie talked about the process of recognizing what you had internalized and then moving beyond that. I think for those of us I've spent 30 plus years in my profession as well and learned a lot along the way. Valerie, you work with 20-somethings, maybe even younger. And Mona's a mom. And Christy, I'm sure people come to you for advice. So what do you tell them? What do you tell them to think about going into the world of the workplace now?
I tell them to be mindful of their boundaries, to articulate their boundaries clearly and without apology. And that's what I tell the women. And I tell the men to be able to hear when boundaries are being articulated, to listen for it, to be respectful, to be. And I tell all of them to approach each other with compassion and with kindness.
And can they take that in at a young age?
I think they try. And that's what makes me hopeful.
I know, Christy, you have written an essay about your experience that went viral. And in that essay, which is about a lot of things, but you talk about being on a panel and addressing an intern. And I mean, you're trying your best to be honest in a situation where people gainsay you or mansplain you.
Yes. I don't think I even knew the word mansplain at the time, but I was basically I was asked what it was like to be a woman at my company, and I was the only woman on the panel, so I answered the question. And then all three men on the panel basically said, no, I think it's actually a really good place to be a woman. And I just sort of sat there with my mouth hanging open, like, what's happening? How do they know? How would they know? It was very, very strange.
So if you had that panel to redo in 2018 in the wake of Me Too, how would you have handled that?
I would like to think at this point I would be able to, without derailing the entire panel, kind of say, hey, let's take a minute and look at what's happening here. I just said what it was like to be me, and then three men told me that I don't know. How would anyone know but me what it's like to be me? And I'd like to think that the men on the panel and in the audience would be more receptive to listening. I'd love to think I'd have the presence of mind to do that.
Without having your jaw drop. Mona, what about you're a mom and a worker? So what do you tell your kids?
You know, I think they've grown up and they've actually seen me go through some of these incidences where an attorney told me, don't talk to HR because you're going to be the one that suffers in the long run. So my son had said, you know, Mom, I know you're going to have a voice someday for other women. And that's kind of what sparked me posting the post I did on sexual harassment a year ago. I think, honestly, it's a cultural change that will take time and I think patience and communication between both genders. I think we're at a place now where the men are just so freaked out. They're like, well, I won't go to lunch with a woman. I won't do this, right, or that. And I'm thinking it's more conversation. It's more for the men to be at the table partnering with the women or change won't happen.
You published your own story just prior to the presidential election in 2016. We are talking just over a year after that. The burst of Me Too and Time's Out have really hit. I mean, it's every day for those of us in the news business, like who's been outed, what's happened. I'm wondering, Mona, how you feel a year later, you were way ahead of the curve, I guess.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
But in speaking out, yes, I think it's been amazing to see all the voices in the Me Too movement and see all the people stepping forward. I think it's a pendulum because I've been asked, does it ever swing too far where anyone that's even accused is thrown out? And I think the pendulum also always has to swing too far one way before it centralizes and moderates in a movement. And I think, again, having all the partners at the table is going to make a difference, right? Like, if someone offends you, they may not have meant to, but really having an open discussion with them and them being able to listen and alter their behavior, that's what's going to take. And I really think it's going to be in the homes. By the time you're in high school, college, it's almost too late when you look at the sexual assault rates of 1 in 4, 1 in 5 women by the time they graduate from college. You really have to start in the home in educating the youth.
We'll be talking about that later this hour as our show continues. Valerie, you have now a position of power where you can influence young people who are going to go out into the workplace. Do you feel optimistic about society changing, about cultural values shifting?
I think I'm a little bit still unsure about the future, in that I think the question of intersectionality is important. I think when and how we reintroduce the concept of due process is also important. Until we solve those things, it's hard to be truly optimistic, because they've been sort of a Gordian knot that we have not been able to untie for all this time.
And unfortunately, we have to leave this portion of our conversation there. That voice was Valerie Curtis-Newtons. She's a professor and head of the directing program at the University of Washington. Mona Locke, former journalist, former first lady of Washington State, who now works in the private sector, but she's seen it all from her vantage points. And Christy Coulter, a Seattle writer who's worked in the tech industry here in Seattle for more than a decade. Her book, Nothing Good Can Come From This, will be in stores this summer. We want to hear from you, listeners. Email us at record@kuow.org. And if you like what you're listening to and want to know in advance when we're working on stories that relate to this topic, join our email list. Sign up, kuow.org/record.